Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
Well, hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Lisa Hendy and Friends. How are we already midway through January? I can't believe it. And I hope you're still holding fast on your resolutions. If you've already given up, I encourage you to go back to that list and to treat those with great excitement. There's a reason that you set goals for this year that I did, too. And if we've already given up, it's not too late to turn back and to start afresh. And I'm really hoping that our guest for this week's show will encourage us in more ways than one to really rededicate ourselves to our life's purpose. Joining us today is August Turak, and August is an award-winning author and speaker and consultant and contributor for Forbes.com and the BBC. He is also the founder of the spiritual and educational nonprofit, the Self-Knowledge Symposium Foundation. He retired as a successful entrepreneur and corporate executive, and his book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, was published in 2013 by Columbia Business School Publishing. When August is not praying and working alongside the Trappist Monks of Mepkin Abbey, he works with his nonprofit and lives on a 75-acre farm near Raleigh, North Carolina. And he joins us today to discuss a beautiful new book, Brother John, A Monk, A Pilgrim, and the Purpose of Life. Welcome, August, to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a real treat. I've since this book landed on my desk, I've picked it up so many times and just really enjoyed my time with that. Before we jump into Brother John, though, I always like to ask my guests just to start off by telling us a little bit more about your story. What makes up August's story?
Well, August's story is a varied and strange tale to tell, but I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from a large Catholic. It was redundant back in those days. Large and Catholic were redundant. All Catholic families were large. So there was 8 children in my family. My mother was Irish. My father, Slovak. Went to Catholic schools. And a big thing that started changing my life is I won a scholarship when I was 14 years old to go to a prep school up in Connecticut. And I went up there for 3 years, and it was a very transformative experience. And I came back and started at the University of Pittsburgh, and it was the late 60s and early 70s, and I got the spiritual bug. Everybody was talking about spirituality back then, and I just got really determined to kind of get to the bottom of things. And I ended up actually dropping out of college. I studied Zen Buddhism for 5 years, believe it or not. And the reason I first heard about the monasteries and Trappist in particular was because I became fascinated by Thomas Merton. And interestingly, a lot of people start out with reading about his Seeds of Contemplation, mm-hmm. and his seven-storied mountain and his stories of the monastery. And eventually they may come to the fact that he was fascinated by Zen Buddhism and actually died hanging out with a bunch of Zen monks. Well, with me, it was the opposite. I was fascinated by Zen and came across his writings on Zen. And that led me back to his work with the monastery and the stuff, and the Trappist monks. And that's how I got interested in the Trappist through that route. Eventually, I ended up working with I worked for 5 years during that period as a carpet installer, I was on a spiritual path. And what I used to do is go to bookstores. I'd travel around the country, go to different cities. I could always get a job with my truck and my tools. And I was a full-time seeker, basically. And I used to go to bookstores, religious bookstores. And I'd ask people who ran them. Back in those days, everybody owned the bookstores. There were no Barnes and Nobles. And I'd say, who are the coolest people in town? Who are people that can teach me something about life? And one bookstore in Washington, D.C. gave me the name of a man named Lewis R. Mobley and a phone number. That's all it was. And I called him up, and he ended up having me out to his house. And it turned out he lived on an estate outside of Washington, D.C. And he had been the founder of the IBM Executive School and ran it for 10 years, from 1956 to 66. And he had a profound spiritual vocation, which he had built a lot of the spiritual stuff into his IBM Executive School. And I ended up, at that point, I had no interest in business, but I was so fascinated with everything he knew about theology and philosophy and everything, and that we stayed up all night talking. And about 6 months later, I called him up and I said, listen, actually, I went back to college, graduated, and then I called him up and I said, listen, I got a proposition for you. I said, I know you're retired now. You have a small consulting firm. I will work with, I'd like to find clients for you. I'll work for free. All I want in exchange is you to teach me everything you know. And he said, I'll go you one better. He said, you can move down here, move into our guest house, live with me and my family. He still had teenage children at the time. You can eat dinner, eat your meals with us. And every morning I will tutor you one-on-one in my library. And in the afternoons, you can go out and hustle with some clients. But I have one condition. I said, what's that? And he said, I insist on paying you. So I actually moved down to D.C. and moved in with him and his family for a couple of years. I eventually ended up in New York City, where I latched on with a fledgling new company called, which was later called MTV Music Television. So I was one of the founding employees of MTV. I had a nice television career in the 80s, and I ended up coming down here to work in the software business. I now live outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. And I eventually, but I always was, spirituality was always the top thing in my life. And I started coaching college kids about religion and spirituality on a volunteer basis at the local universities here, which are Duke and Carolina and State. And in 1993, me and some of my spiritual buddies got together, four of us, including me, and said, let's start a company. And I talk about this a lot in my other book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, about how we started out. My partner said, we don't have a business plan, but we're smart guys. We'll figure out something to do.
Whoops.
That's how we started out. I said, but although we didn't know what we wanted to do, we knew exactly who we wanted to be. So the first thing we did was kind of like Citizen Kane, is we sat down and wrote our principles down. These are the things we saw going into business, not as a business adventure, but as a spiritual adventure. If you really want to know who you really are, if you really want to know what you really believe, if you really want to know whether you truly believe in your principles or you're just making noises, then you know, put them to the test. And believe you, when you start a company on $2,500 without a business plan and you make a commitment that you're not going to put any more money into the business, then you find out quickly whether you're serious or not. So we started building that business up. 7 years later, actually, we built from $2,500 to we sold for millions of dollars to an Israeli company, and a couple of years later, the combined two companies, our company and the Israeli company, got flipped to BMC Software for $150 million. So we actually did well in business. But along the way, I continued on my spiritual path, and a skydiving accident in 1996, coaching some college kids. They said, come on, we're going to do this team building thing. We're all going to go skydiving. You got to come too. I said in my other book, I said I was brave enough to jump out of an airplane, but not brave enough to tell those kids that I was too darn old to be jumping out of an airplane. And I smashed my ankle to smithereens. I compound fractured the tibia and the fibula. Ended up in the hospital. Ended up having all these horrible panic attacks and a deep, dark depression. It was the beginning of what I later referred to as my two-year dark night of the soul came on me while I was in the hospital. And what it really was that I couldn't figure out where it was all coming from. And I was laying there in the hospital for a week. And finally it dawned on me that I It was my mortality. I was facing my mortality for the first time. Sure, this was only a broken ankle, but in a, you know, not too long in the future, the doctor was going to say, "I'm sorry, Mr. Turek, there's nothing more you can do for you." And so then when I realized that, then I reached down inside for, you know, I'd been on this spiritual path for almost 20 years. So there's got to be, I can fall back on that, right? Wrong. As Father Christian later told us, sometimes God seemingly abandons us. In the monastic tradition, they call it Deus absconditus. God is seemingly absconds and leaves us. According to St. John of the Cross, he does this in order to convince us absolutely how much we need him and to force us to really come looking for him in a serious way. Anyway, that's where I found myself. And the depression was deepening as I got out of the hospital. The panic went away, but the depression was, the storm clouds were gathering more and more. I felt like I was kind of being sucked down. And in the midst of this, 6 months later, I get a telephone call from one of my students, and he said, "Augie, I want you to know that I'm taking your advice." I said, "What advice?" He said, "You told us to do something with our summer vacation that was meaningful rather than just drink beer and chase girls." And I said, "Well," I didn't remember telling him that, frankly. And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And his name was Josh. And he said, "I'm at a Trappist monastery. I'm spending the summer here as a monastic guest. I get up at 3 a.m. and I do everything the monks do." And I just blurted out, I said, "I want to come." And he said, "When?" And I said, "Now." And then I realized it was Wednesday, and I was sitting at my desk, and I was the CEO of a company. And I said, "Friday, this weekend." And he said, "Well, let me go ask Brother John." And that was the first time I ever heard Brother John's voice, name. And he came back about 5 minutes later. He said, "Brother John," said, "come on down." And I now know, because it's, you know, you usually have to go months ahead of time to get a reservation. So they must have loved Josh very much, which I knew, I found out later they did. The monks really did love Josh. And so they squeezed me in that very weekend. And I came back. I was so blown away. I came back the next weekend and then the next weekend. And then I applied for my own monastic guest to stay for 3 weeks over Christmas. That was 1996. And so I went down there in desperate straits, very, very depressed, as I said before. And that's when all the stuff that I talk about in the book, Brother John, took place. It was that very Christmas in 1996 when I spent about 3 or 4 weeks down there.
It's amazing how an encounter like that can be so formative. It's interesting when your book, Brother John, landed on my desk. Initially, when you hold this book, it is a quite lovely illustrated hardcover book, and the illustrations are of art quality. And when it landed on my desk, I didn't quite know what to make of it, because most often when you receive a book with pictures in it, it's a book for children. And so I think that what you've created is, as described by my friend Jim Martin, a beautiful and beautifully illustrated parable for our time, for any time, is what he says of it. Really, this is your parable. And this particular iteration of the book is something new, but this is a story you've been telling for a while. Tell us about how the book came to be in its current form.
Well, in 2004, now I keep looking back, I keep mentioning my college students and everything. And it seems like I thought I was doing them a favor all those years that I was volunteering. It seems like they did me the favor. But in 2004, in 1998, real quickly, I had a spiritual experience with the help of the monks that put Humpty Dumpty back together again after this long, dark night of the soul, this two-year thing that I went through. And I'm very, very pleased to say that, you know, even though I had battled depression since I was about 14 years old, and it got very, very severe during that period, I've never had a moment's depression since. So it's been over 20 years now since I've ever had any inkling of any kind of depression. So the Lord really didn't work for me.
But beautiful.
I went on in 1999 to sell my companies, as I said before. Then I went off to study theology at St. John's University up in Minnesota. And I highly recommend St. John's to anybody who's got an inkling of wanting to get up and study some theology. Loved the place. And so I came back, and my college students said, one of my students sent me an email. He said, "You know, you've got to enter this essay contest. The Templeton Foundation's got this essay contest." Well, I'd never written anything before, but I checked it out, and it was it had been going on for almost 2 years, and it was an essay contest. In 3,500 words or less, answer the question, what is the purpose of life? And it said it's open to previously published material, professional writers, and I thought, oh my, I only had a week. I had about 10 days to the deadline. And I'd never tried anything. But there, all these, so my students are egging me on, you got to try, take a crack at it. So I started to work on it, wasn't getting anywhere fast. And another one of my students, matter of fact, I just talked to him the other day, a couple of days ago. We had a nice long chat. He's now pushing 50. But anyway, 445 anyway. And he said, hey, why don't you just write up that story about Brother John that you love to tell so much? And I said, wow, that's a really good idea. So I sat down, and about 2 days, I wrote the story of Brother John. I polished it for another 2 days, and then the deadline was looming, and I hit send, and I sent it in to the, as my essay. 6 months goes by, I've completely forgotten about it, and I get a telephone call, and there's about three or four people on a conference call, and they said I had won the $100,000 grand prize.
Wow.
And I had gone up against 10,000 essays from 47 countries, and I had won the grand prize with my essay, Brother John. And I was just completely and utterly, utterly blown away. I can remember I was screaming into the phone, no! And they were screaming, yes, no, yes, no. And it was just, you know, really blowing. And it, so that really radically changed my life. The next thing I know, the essay, the Brother John essay, was reprinted in the Best of Christian Writings and the Best of Catholic Writings. These are anthologies and writings. And then I was, I happened to write what I thought was a white paper about why I thought the Trappists were so darn good at business. And I get a call from Forbes magazine. Somebody had sent it to them, and I'd given it to some friends, and they said, could you make it into an article? And we'll make it a four-part article. I said, fine. We want to change the title to what? And I said, sure, what is it? And he said, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks. And then that went viral, and that led to a telephone call from Columbia Business School Publishing. Could you turn that book into a, could you turn that essay into a book? And I said, sure, I'll try. And that came out in 2013 as Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, which has been extraordinarily successful. It's been translated into three other languages, and there's an Audible version, and all this stuff has happened along that lines. As a matter of fact, next week I'm going to be visiting the Bush School of Business at Catholic University, and they want to build my work into their curriculum up there. And then I was interviewed by the BBC about Business Secrets, and they liked the interview so much they said, would you like to be a contributor? So that's how I became a contributor. I've been a contributor for the BBC for 5 years about all this stuff. But in the meantime, there's always been a trickle of people who would reach out to me and say, well, listen, I found your Brother John essay somewhere, and I read it, and it really helped me get through the death of a child or the or some terrible divorce or something. Even one of my professors actually wrote me from St. John's because his wife of 30 years had run away with another man and just devastated him, and somebody gave him my essay, and he wrote me this very moving essay about how a letter about how my essay had helped him. And then a year ago August, a man drove 6 hours to thank me for writing Brother John.
Wow.
And he, yes, and he was from and what had happened is that he was an executive at a bank. And he had been he is madly in love with his wife. He's about 43 years old. And his wife walked in and said, I'm divorcing you. Completely, he kind of grinned at me. He blindsided him, and then he smiled at me and said, well, maybe that was part of the problem. And then I was blindsided. Tells you something about me. But he went into a death spiral, and he almost committed suicide. And somehow or another, I don't even remember, to tell you the truth, how where he found my essay, because Brother John had fallen into obscurity by this time, pretty much. You know, he had to really find it. And he found the essay, and it really helped him tremendously. That led him to my book, which he loved too. And then he went to the monastery, and the monks took him in.
Beautiful.
He took a sabbatical from his job and spent a couple of months living with the monks at Mepkin Abbey. And when he left, that turned his life around. And when he left, he asked for my address, and he drove from Charleston up here to my house, sat on my back porch just to thank me for writing the Brother John essay. And I said, you know, I feel tremendously moved and humbled because you're not the first person, but I also feel guilty. And he said, why would you feel guilty? I said, because if it's able to help a dozen people or so, then why am I not helping 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000? And as soon as he left, I called Melissa. I have a nonprofit corporation. I do all my, I'm superstitious this way. I do all my religious and spiritual work through a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I don't accept any money from my book royalties or my speaking engagements. And I have a woman named Melissa who runs this for me. And I called Melissa and I said, Melissa, we got to, I've been kicking around this idea. We got to do it. And for years, I'd thought to myself, how can I publish Brother John? Well, it's an essay. It's not a book. But what if it was an illustrated book? What if I got, and then the Lord sent me, literally, this is true, an Irish Catholic artist who turned out to be famous. As a matter of fact, he got really into the, I've never met the man to this day. Talk about strange things. I've never met the artist. I met him through the internet and somebody recommended him to me, and I called him up, and he got so excited about the project, and on his own nickel, he went down to Mepkin Abbey and took all these photographs, and his name is Glenn Harrington. So he was so excited. He had his vision for the book. And so I called my nephew at Scholastic. He works for Scholastic, the big publishing house mm-hmm. in New York. And I said, Jamie, I said, this guy wants to do the art. And I said, but I don't know anything about art, and this is such a big commitment on my part. I said, what can you find out about the man? And he calls me back 2 days later. He says, oh, my God, he's famous. He said, everybody in New York uses him. He charges, $10,000 for one cover, and we pay it all the time. And he's illustrated 300 books. And so I went with – so Glenn and I collaborated on making Brother John into a book. And then in October, we launched it, and what I did is I bought I printed way too many copies, but if it really does catch on and it's got a Christmas connection, since the story takes place on Christmas, I just don't want to be caught without any books. Well, the Lord was with me again, because we sold out all the books we sent out to the distributor, and were sold in 48 hours. And then we shipped another several thousand books, and they sold in a week. And then we sent several thousand more out, and they've been sold. We've had four shipments of books since October 21st, and they've all sold out. And now it looks like I'm going to have to do a reorder of another 10 or 15,000 more books. So it's been an incredible story. I mean, it's just...
I'm not surprised by the success, because there's something about this book that truly stays with you. You may not know initially when you pick it up, why it's in your hands, but I think that every time I've read it, and it's been now probably four or five times that I've read it over the time that I've had it, it brings up something different for me each time. And I love that you chose to present it in the format that you did, with the beautiful illustrations, which it's not, it's not what you'd think, folks who are listening, of a typical picture book, because the illustrator has his own personal experience of what the prose is saying in the book. But I think in an age when mental health issues and suicide rates are spiking so much, there's something very timely about this. And I'm not saying that just because this is a book for anybody who's struggling. Really, we all have a seeking for purpose and a longing, to understand our life's path. And this really speaks to that. So I'm not surprised that it's done so beautifully. Have you had a chance? I don't know is Brother John still living? Because this happened quite a long time ago.
Yes, and a matter of fact, it's one of the great things is that I just saw him a few weeks. The monastery actually bought 500 copies of Brother John, and once a year they have a big party for their benefactors. They have a concert at parties. It's not exactly the best word for it, but they have a reception and an event to celebrate their benefactors, and they bought 500 copies. And Brother John and I signed them all for them. So Brother John signed 500 copies. So yes,
what a gift.
He is still alive, and he was dedicated. Just typical Brother John. I mean, I had to take breaks. I mean, signing 500 copies of a book is not an easy thing to do. He did it all at once. He wouldn't stop. He just did 500 copies right straight through. So yes, he's still a beautiful, wonderful guy. And
We did an interview with a newspaper together not too long ago, a newspaper article, and they asked him if he remembered the incident with me, of him standing outside under an umbrella on a Christmas Eve in 38 degree weather, and he just gets shyly smiled and said, "Oh no, I don't remember." And I said, I thought to myself, of course he doesn't remember. It's standard operating procedure for him. There's nothing remarkable for him. It was remarkable for me and for the rest of us.
That's part of the message of this story, though, that gave me such hope when I read it. You know, I'm a simple person. I'm a wife and a mom and a friend and a sister and a daughter. And most of the, you know, things that make up my daily life are not remarkable, news-shattering kinds of events. But the encounter that he had with you, which was very much of a part of the spirit of who he was as a servant spirit, somebody who looks to, encounter people in the course of his daily life, it wasn't for him something that he would think was really earth-shattering. But for you, it changed the course of your life. And having that message in the book format made me realize that, you know, those little things that I do every day, they do have a purpose. They do matter.
I could not agree. I mean, that's absolutely, so incredibly important point. I mean, if you recall in the book, to fill the listeners in real quickly, what happens on Christmas Eve is that I'm there, of course, I'm going through this existential crisis, midlife crisis, whatever you want to call it. And I'm down there. And every day you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you go to church 8 times a day. And then you work on the monastery farm. And Christmas Eve is the same as any other day. But the only difference is you go to Mass at 8 o'clock at night when you usually would be going to bed. So you're already up past your bedtime. And, of course, it's Christmas Mass, so it goes for about an hour and a half. And then you go to have this party, which is just a simple cookies and apple cider kind of party. But it's extremely rare thing for the Trappist to have any kind of party. So I went to that, and I was exhausted. I was just out on my feet. I'd been working. I'd been going to church and all this stuff all day long. And I'd been up since 3 in the morning. It's 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. So I said, I got to get to bed. And then all of a sudden, as I'm walking to the refectory door, I realize the rain is pounding down on the roof. And it's only 38 degrees outside. And I just have this habit that they give you. It's called a monastic guest habit that I was wearing. And I thought, this is going to get soaked in the rain, and then I got to get up for services in the morning, and I'm going to be soaked. And I open the door, and the light pours out, and there's someone standing under an umbrella. And I squint, and it's Brother John. And I said, Brother John, what are you doing? And he said, I'm here to walk those who have forgotten their umbrellas back to their rooms. So he started walking me back, and as I mentioned in the book, I was just absolutely thunderstruck that a man who had been in the monastery for 4 years would prefer to, and never gets a party, would prefer to, and works harder than any of the other, all the monks work hard, and he works hardest of all. And here he is preferring to stand, except some goofball like me forgets his umbrella. He's there to walk me out back to my room. And I went to see Father Christian about it, my spiritual director, and the first thing he says, and I mentioned this in the book, he says, so you noticed, did you? That it's amazing how much people take things like that for granted in life. And to me, that's been one of my real motifs that I talk to when I'm teaching and working with. I said, you know, you got to learn how to notice. You got to take the blinders off. You know, what does Jesus say? Blessed are those who have eyes to see, right? You've got to learn how to see. You have to learn all over again if you have to. And a lot of what the monks are doing down there, the reason why they join the monastery is to learn how to see and hear again. To take the wax out of your ears. And one of the nicest compliments I ever got in my life was several years after this very same Josh, who took me to the monastery in the first place. Years went by, two or three years, and I get a letter out of the blue from that same Josh. As a matter of fact, it's the last time I ever heard from him. And he says, you know, Augie, I was a student of yours for 4 years. He said, and I was enthralled by all the amazing stories and amazing things that seemed to happen for you, extraordinary things that seemed to happen to you. And he said, you know, now I realize that there's nothing extraordinary about your life. The kinds of things that are happening to you are happening to us all. Mm-hmm. The only thing, the difference is you notice.
You notice, and you go a step further and share.
and share. And he said, you're the only thing that's extraordinary about you is you see the extraordinary in the ordinary.
Well, that's a nice epitaph, I'd say, for Josh.
Yeah, and I've never forgotten that as being one of the nicest. And that's the way Brother John and the monks are. You know, and just that was, I'm illustrating your, coming back to your point. We all, you know, have tremendous opportunities. Everything's around us every day to make a difference. And one of the things that I'm very strident about in the book is that it isn't a question. Everybody in our society is trying to find their purpose, as if there's as many purposes as there are people. I don't think there's as many purposes. I think we all have the exact same purpose. Now, it may manifest itself in many, many different ways, but we all have a vocation. And that vocation is, as I say in the very first paragraph, self-transcendence. We are all here for self-transcendence. And I define self-transcendence as becoming the best human being you can possibly be. And while I didn't mention it in Brother John, I go on to come back to that theme in my book, Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks. And I said, the purpose of every human life, whether you realize it or not, or whether you agree with me or not, is that we are all here to be transformed from selfish to selfless human beings.
Beautiful. Well, I want to congratulate you on such a lovely, really, for me, a pivotal book that will be with me throughout the next year ahead. And I'm so excited for our listeners to get hold of it. There are lots of ways to reach out to August. One of the best ways is to check out his website at augustturak.com. And we will have links in the show notes over at the blog to his site. You can follow him on Twitter. Definitely get a hold of Brother John, the book. And additionally, we'll link to Business Secrets of the Trappist Monks, both available in a wide variety of places, but we'll give you some Amazon links for those. August, is there anything from a closing perspective that you'd like to share with our listeners before we let you get back to transcending and transforming the world?
Well, the thing that one of the themes of Brother John that I've been getting into for the new year on my Facebook, by the way, you can also follow me on Facebook. And I was writing to the people on Facebook. I said, Brother John is also about hope. And, you know, in the darkest hours, grace, we need to realize that grace is there for us. And the grace is so much closer than we usually think. And so my message to everyone is there is hope. There is hope for all of us. And it's closer, and the grace that we need in our lives so desperately is so much closer than we think.
Well, beautiful. I want to thank you so much. I hope that we can have you on again in the future to talk about what comes next, because I'm positive there's something cool coming next. So
I'd love to come back. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much again. Our guest today has been August Turak, and definitely check out his website at augustturak.com. We will, again, have links to that over at lisahendy.com, and you can follow me on social media at lisahendy. I want to encourage you, if you've enjoyed the podcast, to go on over to the Apple Podcast Store and leave us a little ranking, or share this with a friend, especially somebody that you know that may need a little hope for their days ahead, and pick up a copy of Brother John. Before you pass it along to your friend, make sure you read it for yourself, or do yourself a favor and just grab two copies. Until next week, friends, I wish you and yours all the best. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next time.
BritBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusOfLexington.com.